Good day, good day, good day. Happy Tuesday. We are excited and delighted to be back with you for another Holistic Life podcast. I am your host, Shelby Frederick. We are broadcasting live from the Columbus, Ohio area. And today is our favorite day of the week, which is every day is our favorite day of the week. Today is Tuesday. And again, just delighted to be back with you for another Holistic Life podcast as we are in our Understanding PTSD series here for the month of July. I will give you a moment for those of you that are coming in to like and to share the broadcast. And we're going to jump right in. Last week, we began to talk about just some history. We looked at some risk factors for PTSD, really delved into what some of the causes are. Most of the time, people think that PTSD is basically those that is just restricted to veterans and those that have been in any type of war conflict. But as we learned on last week, that there are many different complex things that can cause PTSD. And today we're going to take a look at just some of the symptoms, As we mentioned on last week, that there are a clear set of symptoms that make PTSD unique from other mental disorders. It may not look the same in every person, and not all people will experience the same severity of symptoms. However, what we have recognized is that all people with PTSD will exhibit four main symptoms. And this is what we are going to talk about on today, our four main symptoms. Number one would be re-experiencing or intrusion. Number two would be avoidance. Number three is hyper arousal, or what we call on edge. And then number four would be negative cognitions and mood symptoms, meaning other words, feeling worse about yourself or worse about the world. Most people will experience one or two of these symptoms that we're going to talk about on today as a result of traumatic events. But people with PTSD will suffer from all of them to some degree. The symptoms usually appear within about 6 months of the trauma, although they might begin manifesting or showing up at a later date. According to the DSM-5, in order to be diagnosed with PTSD, the symptoms must last longer than 1 month, The symptoms, they must be severe enough that they interfere with daily life, and that they must not be related to any other factors, such as any other medications that a person may be on, if they are involved in or using any type of substance abuse or any other illness. So it isn't to say that people experiencing PTSD may not also struggle with things like substance abuse, but that isn't the initial source of it. So number one, when we talk about re-experiencing or intrusion is one of the telltale signs of PTSD. So when a person re-experiences something, it means that they are involuntarily reliving that traumatic event that triggered their PTSD. They're reliving it. And this intrusion of thought, sometimes it'll show up in a variety of ways. It could show up in nightmares. It could show up in flashbacks. It can show up in reoccurring memories, distressing thoughts, becoming stressed in physical ways, such as sweating or experiencing heart palpitations. So re-experiencing can be triggered by anything that reminds someone of the event. It could be words, it could be locations, objects, people or even similar situations. Now, what are flashbacks? And excuse me here. What are flashbacks? Flashbacks are often the most troubling. So a person who has a flashback, excuse me, feels like they're actually re-experiencing the traumatic event in real time. So it's different than like a nightmare, but they are literally re-experiencing that traumatic event in real time. Now, there's one psychologist, Dr. Matthew Toll, who has stated that researchers found that most often a flashback centers on the warning or the watch out moment when at the time of the trauma, when it occurred, that the person first felt the threat of danger. So this helps to explain why people having flashbacks may take sudden and strong defensive actions, sometimes causing harm to themselves or others. And it's because they're feeling seriously threatened right now. So that's a flashback. That is a person that is experiencing it as if it was happening in real time. Now, the second would be avoidance. Avoidance is a person, you know, when they experience a traumatic event and they find themselves wanting to avoid things that remind them of the event. They may also become afraid of doing something or going somewhere similar to the original traumatic event. For instance, someone who has been in a serious car accident, they may want to avoid driving because they are afraid to drive in certain circumstances, such as heavy traffic or snowy roads. Someone who has been sexually abused may want to avoid intimacy in the future. Some other symptoms of avoidance also includes the avoidance of even talking about or having conversations that remind a person of the traumatic event. It also is attempting to avoid close relationships with people that may lead to detachment or estrangement. It could be a lack of interest in social events or activities. It could also be self-medicating with drugs, alcohol, or various types of risky behavior. Now, I remember the first time that I had a car accident. I was 18 years old, and I'll never forget this. I had a 79 Chevy Chevette. It was a 4-speed. It was my first car, and it was in the month of April. Now, I live in Ohio, and those of you that know anything about Midwest weather, and especially if you live here in Ohio, you know that we are still subject to get snow in the month of April. And I was on my way to work. I was working second shift at a hardware store. And it was school had let out, and there was a school bus that was in front of me, maybe two or three cars ahead of me. And the person in front of me stopped, made a sudden stop, and because we were stopping, but the roads were slick. And me and my little 4-speed Chevy Chevette, I began to slide, and I ran into the back of the person that was in front of me and just completely tore the whole front grill of my car up. Was completely devastated because I love that car. And do you not know that for the longest time, and I'm talking about for years, I hated driving in the snow. Now, that wasn't something that I couldn't avoid that because I live in Ohio. It's gonna snow here. there's going to be ice on the roads. But every time it would begin to snow, it was as if I was reliving that all over again. And so I kind of stayed in that state of really just kind of avoiding, because I didn't want to. I was just so because it was traumatizing. It was traumatizing because I specifically remember the stretch of road that I was on. There were deep ditches. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I don't run into the back of this person, I'm surely going to end up in a ditch. And so I have personal experience with that. And it can be, you know, very, very unnerving. And again, not realizing that that was really a form of PTSD, you know, until I kind of worked my way through that. Now, I'm not afraid to drive in the snow now, but I tell you, for a while, it was just like anytime it was snowing or I would be kind of like, oh my goodness, it's the month of April. You know, I wonder if it's going to snow again. So these are the things that we experience and that people can experience, you know, when there is PTSD. Now, let's talk about hyperarousal. Hyperarousal makes someone with PTSD overreact to their outside stimulus. And what happens is the body goes into high alert thinking about a traumatic event and may make the person feel like that they are currently in danger. This feeling can actually result in a bunch of different responses that are confusing to your friends, confusing to your loved ones. But our loved ones, they aren't sharing the same feelings of danger. And so it can be scary and even frustrating to be with someone responding to unseen trauma, because basically that's what it is. It's unseen. So some of the symptoms of hyperarousal are trouble sleeping, outbursts of anger, irritability or ongoing anger, panic, being easily startled, difficulty concentrating, always being on guard for threats. We call that hypervigilance. It could be chronic anxiety, the inability to tolerate loud noise, panic attacks, risky, destructive behavior. These are all symptoms that a person may be in hyperarousal. Now, the next symptom is the negative alterations to cognitions and mood. And basically what this means is that the outlook, which is usually a negative outlook that they have on themselves and on the world. And these feelings that are newly formed after a traumatic event, they're not typical for the person experiencing PTSD. So what does this look like? These negative feelings, they sometimes may appear as feelings of guilt, not just regular, but intense. It could be a distorted sense of blame related to the trauma. It could be the ongoing negative feelings of guilt, shame, anger, or sadness. Sometimes it's hopelessness, lowered interest in activities that a person used to enjoy, being detached and estranged from your loved ones, the inability to experience joy or happiness. You know, so when you think about people that are suffering from PTSD, they may often have these feelings of worthlessness, or they may feel like deep shame for the things that they have either done or for the things that they have witnessed. And what begins to happen is that these feelings, they interfere with them forming relationships, with them maintaining relationships with their friends and their family. And it can also diminish their ability to even pursue gainful employment or to advance their careers. And so when we have irrational thoughts or, you know, errors in our thinking, these cognitive disorders, they are very unpleasant, and they are so unpleasant that they are extreme. They're not only just extreme, but they're exaggerated, and they are not consistent with what is going on in the real world. And so as a result, these distortions can have a negative influence on our mood, a negative influence which leads to unhealthy behaviors. So the connection between thoughts and actions is a part of the reason that these cognitive distortions are considered a central part of what we call cognitive behavioral therapy. So in thinking about these four types of symptoms that people may experience, this gives us a little bit more understanding of why people may respond the way that they do, of why, you know, that we shouldn't just treat it as, you know, blow it off as if it's nothing. These are really symptoms that should really help us to encourage them to seek out, you know, that help and that assistance, because there are different types of PTSD. There are different types of PTSD. And again, having an understanding about what a loved one may be going through, you know, it really helps us to be more compassionate. You know, it helps us to have a greater level of understanding of how we can support, because as I mentioned on last week, we don't want to be in a place where in our wanting to help that we're actually causing more harm. And oftentimes that's what's happened, because we just aren't informed about what the individual is really going through during that particular crisis. So I really don't want to go into to too much. The next part that we'll talk about are the different types of PTSD. And I really don't want to break that up, that information up, because it can be pretty complex when we look at it and when we take a look at putting together and having the understanding of the symptoms and the things that we are looking at. This depends on the type of therapeutic treatments that a person will need to enter into. So again, I thank you all for joining me on today, and just giving us a greater level of understanding of the symptoms of PTSD, how it really makes it unique from other mental disorders. It's not going to look the same in everyone. And, you know, when we have a level of understanding, then we can help to know what our role is as, you know, people who are maybe our loved ones or our friends. It gives us a better understanding of how we interact and how we can be a support to them as they are going through their process. And we'll have a couple more sessions as we are talking about the different types of PTSD. We'll look at risky behavior, PTSD and relationships, and then treatment and what the road to healing looks like. When we get down to the road of healing, of course, you know, I'm going to bring in the biblical principles. We're going to lay that foundation. But I am always, you know, balanced in what I do, because one of the things that I've understood is that not everybody enters into this area via the faith journey, you know, coming in through the biblical path. And so I'm going to always give the natural. We're going to always be informed about what we are talking about. But then we're going to always bring the word where we can marry the two together, and that people can truly experience healing, and the ultimate would be wholeness, because that's always going to be the goal. The goal is always for us to be made whole. That's what Jesus died for. That's what the promise that we have. That is the testimony. My goodness, the testimony that we live for is to testify that I was once sick or I was once lost, but through the road of healing, the road of recovery, through the word of God, understanding the power of Jesus Christ and what he bought for us, is that we are now on the road to wholeness. On the road to wholeness. So I thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in to this week's podcast. I'm your host, Shelby Frederick. We will be back here on next Tuesday at 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Same time, same place. We'll catch you on the airwaves on next week. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye-bye.